Well, that's not this kind of that kind of show. I'm not going to go in depth on my VR porn experience, but we'll do that on a separate podcast.
Yes, that's for Cinematic Suffering After Hours.
Welcome to Cinematic Suffering. I'm Jason. There's Clay.
I'm Clay. Excuse the upshot. I'm having a technical problem, so this is about as good as it gets.
That's so. It's okay.
My nasal hair.
Oh yeah, yeah. They look really well groomed, actually.
They're flowing in the breeze.
Well, Clay, we've had some time to sit and marinate with a movie that we watched a week ago.
Drinking it in, yes.
We're drinking it in, and you know, I was convinced I was going to be a convert to Christianity because I was really feeling the pull of the Lord, and I was like, this movie may be speaking out to me. Maybe that's why I was feeling this feeling. And then afterwards I just dropped back into my harsh nihilistic atheistic ways because of this movie. So I'm blaming all my spiritual deadness to this movie.
That's a good scapegoat, because I'm doubling down. I'm gonna send all my paperwork off to the Satanic Temple, and I'm also undercover gonna join the Satanic Church, because those two factions, they don't get along. They're very at odds with one another. I'm gonna be a rebel and just join both. I'm really gonna double down on Satan.
That's a good idea, actually. I wonder if you ever get caught for that. You know, I hear you're going to the Satanic Temple. Well, you know, you both
they do good work. Get out of here. Be thee gone.
Be thee gone, Satanist.
We're only here for orgies with fat girls that wear black lip gloss.
Oh well, yeah. So you recommended Bloody Bible Camp. I don't know if it was such a recommendation. It was just like something you threw a dart at and said, "Oh, okay, let's fucking look at this."
Total transparency. This is the scientific way that I helped pick the movies that we're gonna watch. Mm-hmm. You know, we both contribute. It's a after all, it's a partnership. But when I'm kind of deciding on stuff that we should watch, I just go on to Prime. I go on to Amazon Prime. And then I find horror movies that are free on Prime. That's the first caveat. And then they have to look bad. And then those are the ones that I'm like, yeah, we should watch this.
Yeah, you definitely picked a doozy. This is the Bloody Bible Camp. It's a movie about it. It's a slasher movie. And again, I've said this in plenty of other stuff that we've watched in the past. I mean, all I can say is that it is a movie.
It is.
I mean, it's not all I can say, but
it endeavors to be a movie.
It does. And luckily not a very long movie, which is, you know, always a great pleasure when I see that there are, you know, movies that are less than an hour and a half. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. We don't have to
get that's the third thing I look out for.
Yeah. Run time. Runtime for sure. But yeah, this one, do you want to tell us more about the director? And
what I can tell you is that it was released originally in 2012. So this is a pre-pandemic film, which is kind of odd when you watch it, because it stinks of the pandemic or some result of it. It's directed by the great Vito Trabucco. I'm terrible with names.
Trabucco.
And co-written by Trabucco and Shelby McIntyre. So two people are responsible for this. It was produced by Reggie Bannister, who many of you horror enthusiasts out there will recognize Reggie as one of the protagonists in the Phantasm series. He was Reggie. He's good old Reggie. Everybody loves Reggie. Produced by him and David C. Haynes, whoever that is. So the general plot is it's a 1977 group of young people. I'm not reading this right off of Wikipedia, by the way, are massacred at the hands of Sister Mary Chopper at the Happy Day Bible Camp.
Yeah, it starts off, you know, I think I wanted to compare it to the Friday the 13th remake, where you see a group of teenagers head into the forest. They go to Camp Crystal Lake, and for the first 20 minutes of the movie, you think this is our group of kids. This is who we're going to be with for the entire time. And then Jason comes out and just slaughters them all. And it's a beautiful opening sequence. And it was one of the best ones I had seen ever in a remake. And I was like, when I was watching Bloody Bloody Bible Camp, I was thinking of that. And I was thinking of how expertly crafted that remake was and how flawless they pulled that off. But yeah, I'm just going to call it Bible Camp for right now. How Bible Camp kind of does the same thing, except think Troma meets Wasso and then
a Troma Wasso collaboration. Bloody, bloody Bible Camp. Now, like, if you were to close your eyes and just imagine what the director of this film looked like, what picture comes into your head? Just the first off the cuff instinct.
When I think of the name Vito Chabucho, I'm going to say, I'm going to call him the Booch.
From here on out, you're the Booch.
I think of a bald, heavily scarred Italian man who probably wears a fedora, dark sunglasses, probably smokes a lot. I would imagine in his mid-40s, mid-50s.
I pulled up an interview with him. I think that I think he's balding. I think he got that. He was wearing a jersey and he had braces on. I thought he had some kind of like dollar store grill kind of situation, but no, those were just braces. So I guess my point is that he, no offense, Vito, but he looks like somebody that would direct Bloody Bloody Bible Camp. He looks like the person responsible for this feature.
Well, the thing is, this movie was the brainchild of Vito, and I think a friend of his, when they were just kind of throwing ideas around and during film school or wherever they were going to school at, and that they decided just to go ahead and make this crazy comedy horror that they're placing it as. And it's one of those films that, you know, it's bad, the acting's bad, but it's not, it's self-aware of itself. It's not like, I don't know, Goblin or Veronica.
It's definitely not done earnestly. And, you know, like, I think we've watched enough of these turds to stop giving them a pass it's like if I said just the most horrific thing imaginable and then was like, look, I'm just joking, guys. What's your problem? You know, just... What's the problem with the necrophilia, you know, like with the pet of necrophilia joke that I just made? I was joking. Right. It was a joke. It rides hard on that, that whole premise that, look, it's silly. It's like, but I mean, and believe me, I'm not easily offended, but geez Louise, it was like an exercise in saying every naughty word that that polite society says, don't say that.
Right. I mean, there were, we have to realize it was 2012, and while 2012 doesn't seem, it's what, 11 years ago now?
Golly,
Well, you think, that was a different time, but it wasn't that different of a time, really, because things were pretty much similar. There's some uses that, like you said, I'm not offended by anything. There was a cool little accidental necrophilia scene that was, you know, it was funny. I laughed when I saw it.
It was way funnier than when they did it in a Serbian film. More laughs in this movie.
I only laughed a couple of times in Serbian, but this one, it was I did laugh at that. There's some cool there. I mean, that's cool, but you know, there's some laugh out loud moments that I really enjoyed in the film.
Oh yeah.
But there was some stuff that there's some language that they use. And I, you know, when they refer to a transsexual, you know, they're using the slur of that word. And we're like, that made me uncomfortable. I mean, because, you know, it's a horrible word to use when referring to someone who's transsexual, and we were both like, this is
there were multiple times during that we were like, okay,
yeah. Which,
you know, and again, it puts you in the like the unfair position of being like, oh, well, I guess you're prude. You've gone all woke, that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, it's weird. You spend enough time out in society and we've kind of like dialed back some of the things that we can say, even in jest. You can argue whether that's okay or not, or whether it's a war on words, whatever. I'll let somebody else, you know, field that one. But it's still, it's arresting a little bit when it happens. Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, you know, what did you just get out of the cryopod? Do you not get
right,
the memo?
Yeah. And that's a slur I haven't used, and I have used it way long ago. But you know, knowing the people that I do now and how they would react to things like that, I would definitely not use it now. And I'm not going to say I was appalled and I would, you know, I'm going to ban this movie or any other movie that uses it. But it's just a crude word to use. And out of everything in there, it was probably the most offensive thing, even over the accidental necrophilia part.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, it was just such a barrage of sophomoric humor and just potty humor and just infantile silliness that I forgot they even said it. It was just one thing after another. If there was a more vulgar way to say that, like to just pack a sentence with so many invectives, it'd be impossible. They just basically just went for it. They said all the naughty things that you're not supposed to say. The thing barely held together as a narrative experiment.
It did. And you know, this, it just reminded me of a trauma film, and you know, trauma doesn't take itself seriously at all. And which isn't a bad thing in itself, but you know, there's a point that even when you watch bad movies that you're like, God, I know they meant for this to be bad, but why did they go this specific direction with the badness of it? You know, we see this opening scene of in the 70s, and that's, I didn't even know that was supposed to be in the 70s when it opened up. It just,
the hairstyles didn't help you with
that. Oh, the weird wigs? No, they didn't help it all.
Somebody, we could get into the wig part later, but somebody involved in this feature had a fetishistic obsession with wigs, and not just the kind that you put on your head.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Talking Merkins, baby.
Merkins, baby. No, they're. But you know, so we have this opening scene where all these people that are totally unlikable in this supposedly Bible camp, and you know, referring to the Lord, but being horny and wanting to have sex and do all this, you know, all the cool stuff, you know, and their sister. What is the name of the killer in here?
Was it Sister Mary?
Sister Mary Chopper.
Which, like, let's just scroll down to the cast list here. Reggie Bannister plays, stars in it as Father Richard Cummings. So that kind of that kind of brilliant wordplay is just, yeah, like on par here. It's just filled up to the gills with that kind of witty stuff.
And then of course you have such intriguing characters as Skunk.
Yes. Skunk. Skunk. I don't remember the individual characters' names. I remember the one that's hard to forget is the guy that is gay in everything but actuality as far as the character goes. It was one of these things to where the more he talked about sex with women, the more he just really seemed to kind of reaffirm his gayness.
Yeah.
he was unpleasant. His friend was patently offensive as a human being. Just all of the male characters in this kind of made me ponder why women have anything to do with us.
As
half of the populace, why we just, you know, why a white line hasn't been painted around the planet.
separate, only come together in certain moments.
Yeah, pick a hemisphere. You're not allowed unless you have, you know, some form in triplicate. Because these dudes are just, oh my God. Like, if it's not the the septic sludge pumping out of their face in the form of words, it's just you know, oh my God, I don't want to make fun of the way somebody looks, but they did it intentionally. All the dudes in this are just sweaty, off-putting, oddly hairless. Either that or just an abundance of hair that's off-putting.
Right. And then we have the glorious killer, Sister Mary Chopper, who dons a nun's outfit and wears a devil mask as well, thus showing the duality of Sister Mary Chopper's inner soul. I really like to read in these films and break them down and see what true meaning lies behind what the auteur is trying to tell us.
Yeah, because it's in his heart. It's not in his head or in any kind of frontal lobe.
It's in the medulla oblongata. But yeah, Sister Mary Chopper kills off the first group of kids. Thank goodness. I was just waiting for that to happen. And then we're introduced to the second group of kids who come in with our Father Cummings, played gloriously by Reggie Bannister.
Yes. Who was in no way just making up every utterance of his dialogue. As if this thing had a script, I'll eat my hat. Because, and I mean, I'm glad that they employed, you know, the disabled to make this film, but they let like blind people do the subtitles. It's not even in the ballpark, Jack.
Yeah. Maybe it was just the auto-generated captions or something that was coming across the screen, because the stuff that was being said on screen was quite different from what the captions were saying. So,
which thankfully it's like, you know, I want to meet the deaf people that are watching this. There's no reason the deaf people would have better right. taste than, you know, those that can hear, but
Right. But, you know, I could delve deeper into whatever semblance of a plot the movie has. But yeah. I think if you know what we're talking about, it's a slasher. It takes place in a campground. You've heard us talk. It's rather crude and abrupt. And there's some cool, funny moments. I don't really need to go any deeper. It's exactly what you would expect.
Yeah, I don't know if I have early onset dementia or something, but for the life of me, I complained about the same thing the last time we reviewed one of these films. I cannot retain these movies after we watch them. They just literally, my brain's like, well, it's the same way your digestive system handles Del Taco or something.
Right.
Out, get out, you know, like
Well, there's you know, after we watch the film, there's such a weird taste or vibe left in the room that you just want to like back off and say, hey, you know, Clay, you want to review this like next week sometime? And like, yeah. And then, you know, we'll hit each other up. Hey, you want to review? I was like, oh, I'm still not ready, man. I'm processing some stuff right now.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to do some outreach work to the trans community for this movie.
So now we're finally in a good place. We can come back and talk about what we specifically remember. And these are the parts that we remember. Just a whole amalgam of smushed up parts and Sister Mary Chopper.
She killed people. A lot of stuff with penises. You know, a decapitation scene where the person is still having sex with the decapitated corpse,
which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. A lot of improv acting from actors that are woefully unprepared for the job. Let me just kind of skim through the movie here and describe briefly what I'm seeing. A lot of people that look like they're in the later stages of heroin, you know, opiate, methamphetamine addiction. Let me go forward here. Bad wigs. Oh my God, bad wigs. Yes. Somebody drove a truck into the front of a wig store and absconded with all the wigs.
Yeah, I'm not sure who was the, I'm trying to think of the guy who drove the van. He was a bald guy, but they just plopped this wig on top of his head. And it looked like he was alive, curling around on his head like some weird tentacled monster. It was never put back on right when they had to do other takes.
Yeah, like, I mean, and to give you kind of a sense for the movie that we're talking about here, like the opening scene or the opening dialogue is, and I don't know if this is a direct quote, but I think it is how big do you think Jesus's penis was, or something along those lines. Yeah, you know, and let me see, by the 14-minute mark is when you get full frontal female nudity with the Merkin. She's got on a Merkin, which I guess they thought that was funny, but she, I guess they figured it's the 70s, everybody had a big bush, dude. But yeah, she had like this wig that looked like they just took some felt and kind of.
I mean, there's a joke I heard, like, it looks like, it looked like she had like Gary Coleman in a headlock from different. Or in a leg lock, I should say. It was some off-base joke that I saw come up, but I was like, oh my God.
Accidentally, you know, spilled a vat of Rogaine in her lap. That's kind of how it looked.
Again, I think of Scary Movie when, you know, they're going to have sex and he opens up her pants and poof. Yeah.
Bats flying out.
Yeah, moths.
Oh, for the simpler, more tasteful times of Scary Movie 1.
Oh, of course. Yeah, we didn't. We can't. We certainly don't remember Scary Movie and the big splooge scene, paste plastering her to the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was done tastefully.
It was. That was this, it was an art film.
It was an art film. I think what I like best about
artists.
I think what I like best about the Sister Mary Chopper, though, is that I'm looking at a still frame here. Of her on the ground, and we see blue jeans, white socks, and tennis shoes sticking out from underneath the nun habit. And I'm like, even if I was a set designer or a costume designer, I would set them up with something a little bit more evil, or, you know, maybe stylish underneath there. But no, it's just the actor came in, had blue jeans, white socks, and his dirty ass sneakers, and that's what he's wearing. So
And they said, like, well, you know, we're gonna put the nun's habit over you, you know, so that no one will see it, no, everyone will forgive this. But that's another thing, it's like, you know, it's one of the ways that you just kind of have to have at least a small amount of contempt for movies like this and Sharknado and these other films that are you're taking advantage of the audience. There's got to be a level of earnestness to these movies that makes them charming. And that charm is gone when you're just going out of your way to make them as like bad intentionally as possible and stupid, muggy and silly. Dumb.
I thought, you know, like you said, I enjoyed certain pieces of it. I saw the comedy horror aspect of it, and I chuckle at a few parts that, you know, were funny. I thought one of the most unusual parts, even though the whole movie was unusual, there's a scene right here. I'm going to show it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I mean, everything was so campy and weird up to that part, but that just made everything say, is this any part trying to portray olive oil and Popeye, or that's a hell of a reference.
I think the Molly was kicking in.
Oh, it must have been.
Yeah,
it definitely must have been the Molly.
Because there's no way that drugs were not imbibed this week, the weekend of filming of Bloody Bloody Bible.
Oh, we do have to mention their special guest star, of course.
Yes, I'll let you spill the beans on that. Spoiler.
Star of film and movies back in the late 70s and early 80s, maybe even the later 80s, maybe even the early 90s. Maybe he did some weirder stuff up in the late part of the 90s. Ron Jeremy plays the titular character known as Jesus.
Jesus, H, which stands for Holy Christ. Yeah. Yes. Yep, they were very proud of themselves that they procured the talent of Mr. Jeremy. And, you know, I guess that they were able to film around his house arrest or whatever. I haven't backtracked, although I don't think that Mr. Jeremy's legal troubles started that far back. And 2012 seems like that seems like the days when Ron Jeremy guest starring in a movie was kind of funny and like, ha ha, it's Ron Jeremy.
Yeah.
Now they'd shut that shit down. Like, no, you cannot have a sex criminal in your film. I haven't done any research. Is he still locked up?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I do not know. And
Google is Ron Jeremy. Locked up. Let's see. An LA County judge on Thursday reaffirmed a decision to release Ron Jeremy to private residence because he is incompetent to stand trial for more than 30 counts of sexual assault.
Holy shit.
30 counts.
30 counts.
Yeah. He's
when was he arrested? What year was he arrested?
Let's see. Like,
it must have been after this.
It was. I'm just going off memory here. It was within like the last. Within the last decade. Not that long ago. When was Ron Jeremy arrested?
It was 2020. June of
2020. Yeah, I remember because he had the mask on. He was trying to be all feeble, which. Oh God. Yeah. That's.
Well, you know, I can understand people, you know, thinking he's, you know, this weird icon of pornography, and I guess he was in a certain way back in those days. But you know, it's my, how the great have fallen.
I mean, of the last person that you would think that would even, oh God, what's he so disgusting? I mean, like, I my heart breaks for any of the victims, but you know, like, I feel like justice has been done on a very small level because, you know, he owes me a lot of money for the movies that I rented back in the day that had him in it. And like, to give this context, like, back in the day, they didn't put him on the front of the box. It wasn't like starring Ron Jeremy. They snuck that in because it was always like the third scene into the feature that you would be, that you'd have to jump up and, you know, one-handedly hit the fast forward button to get past that gopher looking motherfucker. He's just so off-putting in every way.
Yeah, and in this movie, his sleaziness does come through the screen, virtually sliming up everything around you. The keyboards start oozing this filth when he comes on screen.
This viscous fluid
of
unknown origin.
And really, it has no place. It feels like Jesus was kind of shoehorned into this. Maybe not. Jesus is supposed to be responsible for Reggie being returned to life, but you know, they could easily just written Reggie as not being completely dead and getting up and doing what he needed to do. But
they must have offered him an eight ball and, you know, like a stab at the starlets of this, you know, toxic movie.
Three vials of penicillin to go along.
Yeah, like an all over body condom to ward off whatever 70s scabies the man has.
So just, you know, thinking how sleazy and slimy this movie was before, this just kind of elevated it to that trash.
It did indeed. Yes. So yeah, that's,
I'm going to go on a no recommendation for Bible Camp. It was a dumb movie. I'm not just saying that because Ron Jeremy was in it, but yes, overall it was just, it wasn't an enjoyable movie except for that one scene where that girl, I think her name is, what is her name? Oh, it's Deborah Venegas. She played Jennifer. She was just like, oh boy. All right. If you're going to watch it anyway, for anything, watch it for her. In that scene,
it was like you know, like just think back to your most vulgar, off color friend, and you know, it's fun at a party for a minute, but wears thin very quickly when the cops, the bouncers, and angry spouses show up.
Well, I was gonna read some bloody Bible Camp reviews, but I don't think.
Go ahead.
let me see.
Just read one. Read one.
Let me see if I can find. Fine, so bad it's almost good. Almost. Fine comics. Fine is give it a 4 out of 10 stars on IMDb. Fine comic sex and gore during the titles. Dull silliness for the most of the rest. Finally picks up at the end with a surprise appearance that saves the campiness of the camp's events and conspicuously atrocious acting. So this person was like thinking Ron Jeremy saved the film. So.
That is a chronic masturbator.
Oh, I have fond memories of Ron Jeremy back when I would go to the old theater in New York Square and they'd have the porno theaters, and you could just slip and slide along the tracks there, just get in your seat.
I love the way that Ron Jeremy's hairy, taut gut would just kind of drape over these poor women that were at the bottom of their lives, just hitting rock bottom to be in this movie with
this. Let's see. I was thinking some people have like, oh, there it is. A blockheaded comedy. Oh, this one gave it a 2 out of 10. So it's here. A blockheaded. Oh, this is going to have spoilers in it too. So if you made it to the end of this review, you're going to hear some spoilers.
Yep. Spoiler alert.
A blockheaded comedy horror with religious overtones. Bloody, bloody Bible camp is as silly and cheesy as it sounds. I always find the presence of a Ron Jeremy cameo guarantees that a film will be really bad. And so it proves here. To my surprise, he plays Jesus in this film, which may be the most imaginative that the movie gets. Otherwise, it's an inept trauma style trash flick, complete with cheap effects, voyeurism, lots of cheese, wooden acting, and Phantasm's Reggie Bannister as a priest. 2 out of 10. So there it is.
And that there is a definite horror fan, because they mentioned Reggie as, you know, being in Phantasm. So,
well, they didn't even mention him being in Phantasm. Oh, yeah, I guess they did. I just read the fucking thing, Jason. What are you doing?
You're having the same problem I have, where it's just purges. Just purge that.
We did. We purged a lot. Yeah. I did actually do a little kind of recap for myself, especially just trying to find that. That stupid little clip I showed, but
yeah, I was before we got on tonight, I was trying to rewatch the beginning of it, hoping that it would kick in whatever you know languishing synapses are back there trying to fire.
It's shit in your head, just going.
I don't need her cow. It's like you can either have bloody bloody Bible camp, or you can have your childhood memories of your first Christmas, because one's going.
Yeah. Yeah, one is going, so I choose mine just accidentally melded together. So now Ron Jeremy is my father in my first Christmas.
Yeah, that it did the same thing to me. Like, he's actually Santa Claus presenting me with my Bert and Ernie stuffed toys as a child.
Oh, God. Sorry. We're both very traumatized now, apparently.
Yeah.
All right, so bloody, bloody Bible camp. Boop.
Bloop.
That's a thumbs down. Bleh. Sorry.
Sorry. You know, I don't know. There's not enough weed and you know, booze on the planet. So.
Yeah, and please, if you're an actor on the film, if you're a director on the film, don't come.
Then fuck you. Yeah. No,
don't come trashing us. You know, we're not the only people to say this. You must be used to it, and your skin should be very, very thick by now.
I say it each time this pops up. The actors and directors of these movies account for about 88% of our viewership. We always hear from them, and I'm always torn, because it's like, oh, cool, but also I don't care. I don't.
it's always fun getting braided by an actor or other director that was in one of those films. But so, Clay, do we have anything to promote? Do anything we need to push? Do we have any sponsors yet?
I don't have the ad read ready.
Okay.
Next time we'll have the extra special ad read ready.
Okay.
We'll make sure that's prepared.
I did get like some weird invoice where the people were charging us to read their ad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the other way around, isn't it? We don't.
Well, I mean, it just, I paid it out of our cinematic suffering bank account. And so we're at negative 20 now, $20 out. So I'm not sure if I did that right, but we'll read it next week, or, you know, whenever we see our next movie.
Yes, that'll be our next ultra funny shtick is totally real and in no way going to confuse the algorithm of Netflix ad reads. I think that I'm looking at my list of movies here. We've got Creepypasta, The Hoax, Uncle Peckerhead, and The Boneyard, and Evie. Yeah, those are some more recommendations for possible next movies. Do any of those sound appealing?
I'll have to go down that list and look at these various trailers, perhaps, and we'll make a sound judgment. See what happens.
Well, do you have any video game stuff coming up that you want to promote, or?
No, I'm not doing anything like that. I'm just my wife and I run a business called Damage Case Goods, and it's on Instagram. Cool. And we do vending events, and it's wooden retro resin coated plaques with cool fantasy, horror, heavy metal art, t-shirts and other stuff designs. So we do that on the side, as long as our, along with our full-time jobs, along with doing this as well. And so, you know, we've got our hands full. What about you?
Well, I just started a second YouTube channel because, you know, I guess I'm not busy enough where I'm, I record myself drawing the various weird stuff from my imagination, part of which is going to be the cinematic suffering art that you see as the thumbnail art. So you can check that out. Just search for Claytanix Art Layer. Or one of these times when I've built up a couple videos, we'll maybe post a link on here. Right now, I've just made one video public, so it's a very fledgling kind of thing.
That one video was really, it was really fascinating to see, because I've never seen you do your art process except when you were a teenager and seeing you draw at your desk. So seeing you actually do it on the tablet and how you go about it, it was just really cool to watch. And it's all fast forwarded, you know, it's not like you're sitting there and seeing every little cursed Mason, but you're going like pretty quick. You have that camera
sped up. it's sped up to 4 times, and some of the later videos it's sped up to about 8 to 8 speed. So I've speeded up pretty good, but we'll see how that goes. We're just throwing stuff out there, but cinematic suffering is definitely our passion and we're excited about it. Hopefully we get some more viewerships here, some more fans here soon.
Fansos, we love them fansos. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget subscribe, hit that like button. We're on podcasting platforms too. If you're listening to this on Spotify or iTunes or wherever, please leave us a 5-star rating. And until next time, may you all suffer. Hey, how about that? Is that an outro?
May you all suffer. I love it.
All right, bye.
Bye. See ya.